Habari, kuna lahia, kedu, konichiwa, osio, kamunuchen, ni hao, bonjia. The health professions that most people interact with are clinically oriented. These professions, medicine, dentistry, nursing, pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, for example, are primarily focused on individuals. In contrast, epidemiology and other public health professions have as their primary concern the health of populations. This population perspective distinguishes public health from clinical professions. This lecture will describe and illustrate the population perspective. Demography is a science that studies populations, though without a specific focus on population health. Epidemiologists make extensive use of demographic concepts, techniques, and information, as we shall see during the course of this lecture. Because the graphics make the PowerPoint file very large, I have divided it into several files for downloading and viewing. Even if I can't present the information in all of them, I will put them all on the web so that you'll be able to take a look at them and see what you think of the graphs. Here's an outline of the lecture. The lecture will illustrate the population perspective as used in epidemiology and discuss population heterogeneity and demographic characteristics that have a major impact on health. I may or may not have some time to talk about stratification and standardization, which are basic techniques for comparing populations. Epidemiology emphasizes the population perspective. All of us see the world through our perspectives. My perspective as a faculty member is different from your perspective as a student. Your perspective is different from your parents' perspective. Primary care physicians have different perspectives than do specialist physicians, and both have very different perspectives than do physicians who review claims on behalf of a managed care organization. Each of us employs numerous perspectives according to our role and responsibilities in a given activity and our objectives. In public health, we differentiate between two types of perspectives, the individual perspective and the population perspective. Epidemiology, as I noted, emphasizes the population perspective. The individual perspective focuses on the health, risk factors, exposures, and causal mechanisms in people as individuals. Coronary heart disease, cancer, stroke, injury, hypertension, infections, birth defects, asthma, dementia, these are all conditions and events that occur to or in individuals. Each individual has a genetic makeup, early life experience, diet, substance use, physical activity, use of medical care, and many other characteristics that affect her or his risk for various health outcomes. Preventing and treating health conditions at the individual level is the focus of clinical professions, and also to some extent of the public health professions. For example, many epidemiologic studies seek to identify risk factors and causal mechanisms linking those factors to individual health outcomes. Moving to the next slide, by contrast, the population perspective focuses on disorders that occur in large numbers of people, sometimes referred to as mass disease, and focuses on how these disorders are influenced by the physical and social environment. The exposures and causal mechanisms involved are those that function at the level of the group. We can illustrate the population perspective by considering the lung cancer epidemic of the 20th century in the United States. The graph in this slide shows age-adjusted death rates from seven types of cancer: colon and rectum, leukemia, liver, lung and bronchus, pancreas, prostate, and stomach, in U.S. males for the years 1930 to 1998. The graph comes from the American Cancer Society's publication, Cancer Facts and Figures 2002, and is based on data from the National Center for Health Statistics and the Bureau of the Census. Notice that these death rates are age-adjusted. We will explain the concepts of age adjustment and age standardization later. What do we see in this graph? For one, we see that death rates for the seven types of cancer have been changing in different ways during the period. At the beginning of the period, the death rate from stomach cancer was the highest cancer death rate, about twice as large as the second highest, which was cancer of the colon and rectum. By the end of the period, the stomach cancer death rate was the lowest for these seven cancer sites. Death rates for the other cancer sites changed more modestly and in different ways, with one exception. Which cancer is that? Exactly. The clear exception, and it is the most striking feature of the graph, is the dramatic rise in death rates from cancer of the lung and bronchus, from among the lowest death rates in the figure to, ending the period, a death rate nearly twice that of what stomach cancer was at the beginning of the period. The lung cancer death rate peaked in 1990 and by 1998 had fallen approximately 10% from its peak. What is happening here? Before we try to answer that, let us examine the data for women on the next slide. Here is the companion graph showing age-adjusted cancer death rates for United States females for the same period. This graph also shows the marked decline in stomach cancer death rates during the period. The highest cancer death rate in 1930, however, was that for cancer of the uterus, including the uterine cervix, which also had a marked decline during the period, though not to the same level as stomach cancer. The death rate from cancer of the colon and rectum rose until about 1945, but then began a steady decline to a level substantially below that for males. Breast cancer death rates rose modestly from just below the stomach cancer death rate, becoming the highest death rate between about 1948 and 1986. But again, the most dramatic increase in cancer death rates is that for cancer of the lung and bronchus, which rises from the lowest position in 1930 to the highest by far by the end of the period. The rise in the lung cancer death rate in women comes later than that in men and is not as steep, but it depicts the same phenomenon, an epidemic on a large scale. It is noteworthy that a major fatal disease could increase to such an extent with so little national outcry. Imagine if these deaths were due to West Nile virus, anthrax, or airplane crashes. Moreover, to the shame of all of us in the health professions, most of the increase in women and about half of that in men occurred after scientists, health professionals, political leaders, and the public knew, or at least should have known, the primary cause of this epidemic. In the words of Jan Sternsvard of WHO, the World Health Organization, the escalation in tobacco-related deaths has been one of the, quote, most tragic developments in the modern history of medicine. In the 1950s, a large number of epidemiologic and other studies tied cigarette smoking to a number of fatal diseases, particularly lung cancer. In 1964, the U.S. Surgeon General issued a landmark report that declared the relation a causal one and subsequently led to mandatory warnings on cigarette packages and advertisements. Television commercials for cigarettes were banned, and in the 1970s and 1980s, a movement grew to restrict smoking in public places. But throughout the entire period, cigarettes remained, and remain today, one of the most heavily advertised products, and the tobacco industry was, and is, one of the major lobbying forces in Washington and state capitals throughout the country, and in countries throughout the world. The lung cancer epidemic is a vivid demonstration of an epidemic of mass disease and of the need for a population perspective. On the next slide, the population perspective versus the individual perspective, let's contrast these two perspectives on the lung cancer epidemic and its control. The individual perspective is concerned with identifying the factors at the individual level that cause lung cancer. Following the demonstration that smoking is a very strong risk factor for lung cancer, the predominant risk factor, the individual perspective examines the factors that lead people to start smoking and help them to quit. And with provision of services, to help individuals quit smoking. Smoking cessation clinics, for example, assist people who want to quit to become free of their addiction. In contrast, the population perspective is concerned with the environmental factors, social, economic, technological, political, etc., that promote smoking in the population. Tobacco has been smoked by people in the Americas even before Cristoforo Colombo, Christopher Columbus, that is, brought the practice back from Cuba in 1493. Tobacco figured prominently in the economics of the American colonies and was used throughout the 19th century. Yet the lung cancer epidemic did not become evident until the 20th century. A confluence of factors created the conditions for cigarette smoking to mushroom, and along with it, lung cancer. Until late in the 19th century, tobacco was used primarily in pipes, cigars, snuff, and chewing forms, mainly because cigarettes had to be hand-rolled. The invention of the cigarette rolling machine in 1880 revolutionized tobacco use. Around this period, the advent of new approaches to curing tobacco produced a variety, flue-cured tobacco, that produced a less irritating smoke. These changes in manufacturing technology, along with the introduction of mass production techniques, improvements in transportation, the growth of the media, and the advent of mass marketing, pioneered, by the way, by the tobacco industry, created the conditions for the explosion of cigarette smoking. Cigarettes' addictive properties, the glamour of Madison Avenue imagery, and cooperative government actions, including the distribution of free cigarettes to the armed forces during the First and Second World Wars, helped cigarette smoking to become widespread in the United States and the industrialized world. The epidemic probably began early in the century, but its recognition awaited improvements in diagnosis, which, according to Sir Richard Dahl, were responsible for much of the lung cancer increase apparent during the first half of the 20th century. Another major pandemic of the 20th century, and apparently the 21st century as well, is HIV/AIDS, human immunodeficiency virus and acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. The individual perspective on the HIV pandemic focuses on avoiding individual exposure through unprotected sexual intercourse, use of non-sterile drug injection equipment, and exposure to infected blood products. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, has invested millions of dollars in programs to educate, counsel, and test people to teach them about HIV and its transmission, enable them to know whether or not they are infected, in other words, their sero status, and to promote prevention-oriented attitudes and behaviors such as safer sex and sterilization of drug injection equipment. The population perspective, by contrast, focuses on the demographic, economic, social, political, and technological factors that have disseminated the virus. HIV probably existed in isolated locations in sub-Saharan Africa for many years before the 1970s. Factors that contributed to worldwide dissemination include 1. Migrant labor patterns and long-distance truck driving that take African men far from their villages and keep them apart from their families for prolonged periods. 2. Subordination of women in Africa and many other countries, limiting their ability to decline sex and forcing large numbers into commercial sex work. 3. Airline travel and globalization, which helped to carry the virus from Africa to other continents. 4. Changes in sexual mores. And 5. Societal responses to sex, homosexuality, and drug use that have obstructed prevention efforts and continue to do so today. Of course, both HIV and tobacco are now pandemics. In other words, they are epidemics on a worldwide basis. We can also compare the individual and population perspectives in terms of how they approach health problems. This on the next slide. The individual perspective emphasizes diagnosis based on a patient's presenting complaint, history, physical examination, and laboratory test results, and emphasizes patient's treatment derived from the biomedical understanding of the etiology of the disease, pathology, cellular biology, pathophysiology, microbiology, immunology, and pharmacology are the basic sciences that reveal the etiologic processes within the individual. These sciences underlie diagnosis and treatment, which is applied to people as individuals. The population perspective employs community diagnosis through collection and analysis of disease surveillance information, descriptive data, surveys, and analytic studies, and interventions through changes in the healthcare system, governmental policy, and environmental changes. On the next slide, it is tempting for people in public health to champion the population perspective over the individual perspective and to ride off into the sunset holding the population perspective banner high. However, the two perspectives are really complementary to each other. They also represent two ends of a continuum rather than two discrete alternatives. Almost every health condition results from a combination of individual-level factors and population-level factors. The former tend to be proximal. They are immediate antecedents of the health outcome. The latter tend to be distal. They often determine the presence of the individual-level factors. But the modes of prevention for mass disease often include individual-level interventions, such as immunizations. Thus, both perspectives are important for and used by public health and clinical medicine, but the emphases are different. Great advances in the understanding and treatment of disease have been achieved through the individual-level perspective. And, for historical and cultural reasons, the individual-level perspective is more congenial to the United States political and institutional framework. This is not the case in other countries. There are thus important conceptual, methodological, institutional, and practical advantages for the individual-level perspective, at least in the United States. But mass disease, the primary concern of public health, of necessity arises from population-level influences. So the population perspective is fundamental to public health and to epidemiology.